I speak to you in the name of God, the giver of life. Amen. The first thing to say is don't do it. I don't care what Jesus says. I don't care if Matthew repeats what Jesus said. Don't you do it. I don't know how the lyrical beauty of the Beatitudes could degrade so quickly into pathology. Nor do I understand why Jesus said it, or if he didn't say it, how the church pretended he said it. But after a splendid beginning, the Sermon on the Mount has become a kind of smorgasbord of weird sayings, some of them just against the grain of human nature and behavior, some of them toxic and bizarre. More than 20 years ago, Wally Lamb published a perilous novel entitled, I Know This Much Is True. It is the story of Dominic Birdsey, whose identical twin Thomas is paranoid schizophrenic. Although Thomas mostly manages himself with medication, he suffers episodic breaks. During one of those breaks, Thomas, in protest against the American war in Iraq, cuts off his right hand in the town library, citing this morning's verse from Matthew while doing so. The rest of the novel continues sort of in this vein until Dominic finally gains some measure of understanding and acceptance of the loss and the failure and the sorrow of his family's life. But that takes place in a novel. You can write anything in a novel. Just don't do it in real time, in real life. However bad you may feel about yourself or something you may have done that you feel offends somebody, don't listen to Jesus. Just this once, don't do it. And the rest of this passage from Matthew's Gospel, how are we supposed to make sense of it? It just is not true. Anger is not the same as murder. Not in the law, not in practice. We know that. Thoughts and deeds are not always synchronous. Jimmy Carter, his famous Playboy interview, startled the world, or at least the non-male world, when he admitted that although he'd been faithful to his wife, he had felt lust in his heart. Duh. Again, they're not the same. Lust in heart and adultery. One involves thinking and feeling, the other proceeds to doing. Since the time people got married, there has been painful confusion and controversy over the ending of marriages. In our own church, we have gone from a time when divorced persons could not be married again in the church to now when civil divorce is recognized. Are there really no grounds for a marriage to end other than that of adultery? Finally, what do we make about oaths? Most societies have taken oaths seriously. We require our elected president to recite an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. We don't just take his casual word for it. When you testify in court, if you've ever testified in court, you are sworn by an oath to tell the truth. And words you say under oath have a special meaning. We don't just assume that you will be truthful. These oaths are solemn and ceremonial and serve as a kind of liturgy of the truth. I mean no disrespect for the Bible when I confess to you that I find these sayings to be a mishmash of weird and impossible ideals, disconnected to ordinary human hearts and minds. Nevertheless, we all proclaim the gospel of the Lord after we heard them read this morning. And they are, after all, included in the book we call sacred. The best I can do is to think of these sayings as a trope upon the beatitude, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Remember the beatitudes, and one of them says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. All these weird verses can, to put it charitably, be heard as a call to purity of heart. We know that murder is more serious than anger. But anger destroys the community also. And unacknowledged anger will fester and poison even the purest heart. Speaking as a male, I'm well aware of the difference between lust in my heart and sleeping with the wrong woman. But lust has a way of insinuating itself in every fiber of a person, until it appears innocently or dangerously, also destroying the most precious and fragile of relationships. I don't know about divorce. I know nothing about divorce. I've been married for 52 years and never considered that our marriage might end for any reason. But I have counseled too many people who have suffered the real and regrettable sorrow of the unraveling of the bonds of matrimony. Most of the grounds fall far short of adultery, although the sorrow was no less mournful and the damage no less painful. I've taken a few oaths in my life. I took an oath when I was ordained a priest. I swore an oath in the courthouse when I was admitted to practice law. I suppose I swore an oath when I stood with my wife before the priest 52 years ago. But even apart from the formal oath, I believe I would have tried my best to be a faithful priest. Even apart from the courthouse oath, I did in fact render my best efforts on behalf of my clients. And even apart from the words about better for worse, richer for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, even apart from those words, I know I would have loved and cherished the love of my life. As is often the case, my granddaughter Claire, precocious in her wisdom, has given me the template for making sense of this weird gospel lesson. She was at our house on Friday with her brother Liam for a sleepover. We had chicken tenders, baked beans, and delicately arranged strawberries and raspberries. After supper, she brought me a folded piece of paper and asked me to make a project. There's always a project with Claire. On top of the first page was the word seeds, S-E-E-D-S, and at the bottom, name with a line across. I was to sign my name, and inside I was to write something about seeds. There was a space to write, a space to draw a picture of my writing, a space for a diagram, and a space for a picture of my diagram. In the space for writing, she had drawn five lines. As I was beginning to write my essay on seeds, Claire stopped me. "Grandpa, if you want to get an E, you have to fill in all the lines." What was funny about her admonition is that Claire is actually the most unbounded girl in her thought and imagination, unbounded by the lines. But nevertheless, she got the point. If you want to get the right reward, you have to follow the right rules. I think this weird passage from Matthew should be heard as the reverse admonition from Jesus. If you want to have life, if you want to be faithful, if you want to reach the fullness of following Jesus, don't limit yourself to following the rules. Imagine beyond them. Imagine that anger ignites as many fires as murder. Imagine that lust stirs the pot as potently as behavior. Imagine that faithfulness in marriage may lie beyond sexual behavior. And imagine truthfulness as a way of living and not just the blunt edge of an oath. All right, so I invite you to ponder these verses with me. Examine your own heart. Examine your own soul. Where does your purity of heart reside? But above all else, leave your hand attached to your arm. That particular admonition is just wrong. Amen.